All righty, on we go to Cincinnati. Giants get two from the Mets. Jock Peterson goes bananas. It's four bombs, and the Giants get right after skidding along for a while. Let's talk about every Thursday with Sean Estes, our favorite. We love Shawnee because he means weekend's coming. We get to wrap up a week of ball and look forward to a weekend. Checking in with Sean. How you doing, man? Welcome back,
morning, Sean.
What's up, guys? I'm starting to like this Jock guy.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
It took me a while. I mean, it was tough to, you know, because you think about it, you know, the teams that we've seen him on in the past, we haven't been real fan favorites of.
So, no.
You know, the orange and blue or the blue and white he was wearing for all those years, you know, you end up not liking those guys for a while.
Very true. I
think he's starting to warm up to me.
Imagine Cody Bellinger in black and orange. It'd be weird, you know? So,
Yeah, no, no. There's a handful of guys you just can't imagine ever wearing Giants.
I'm trying to think. You were there with Hershiser, weren't you?
When Hershiser was with us,
yeah,
in 98.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we need to talk about that for a second because that was really hard for fans.
I'm still not over him opening, like getting an opening day start at the stick,
now,
Sean.
You were young, Sean. Although you're coming off that great 97 season, can you tell us any? Was it weird at all?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think the fact that Dusty was a Dodger is the only reason that Oral was able to pitch opening day that year. I think if Dusty had never been a Dodger, I think it would be tough for any Giant manager to let him pitch opening day. I mean, I thought it was probably hard for Dusty just to get over what went down in 94. You know, I mean, Oral was, you remember Matty Williams was third base, and Oral was I can't remember what he had said, but kind of taunting the Giants, and you know, Matty just did not like Oral Hershiser, and never probably still doesn't to this day.
Yeah,
based on what happened in '94. Yeah, those were. I mean, he was a Dodger, a lifer. You know, Oral was. Heck, he was one of the best pitchers of that generation for the Dodgers. So, yeah, I mean, when he came to the Giants in '98, I'm sure it was a little bit weird for a lot of guys. It was a little weird for me too, because not only you know was he a Dodger, he was also number 55 for, you know, his whole career. And that's the number that I had. And I was coming off, you know, my 97 season. I had a pretty good year. So, not that I thought that the number had everything to do with my success, but I wasn't, like, too happy to part with it. And he was really the only guy at that time. Now it seems like there's a lot of other 55s, but he was the only guy really that I can remember was number 55. And the only reason I became 55 is because my favorite number growing up was 5, but you could never get 5 as a pitcher. You know, it was always reserved for the infielder.
Right.
So I was just like, all right, I'll take double 5. You know, I'll double it up. And I, you know, and at the time I remember saying, like, the only guy that has that number in the big leagues is Oral Hershiser. So now I'm thinking, I'm gonna have to give it up. So there's a little bit of back and forth after his signing in the papers, just kind of like, you know, just friendly stuff, and I think I made a comment about, you know, maybe what I'd want in compensation for it. This is a joke. And you know, and so when he came into spring training, I was expecting there to be some type of a negotiation, and he just said, you know what, I'm going to take Drysdale's number in honor of him, because I believe Drysdale had passed away right before that year, or I don't remember exactly what the timing was of it, but he ended up taking Drysdale's number and leaving 55 to me. But yeah, he was a great teammate. You know, he helped me through my injury in 98 because he had gone through a bunch of injuries in his career, shoulder stuff, and my rehab coming back from a torn rotator cuff that year. He played catch with me and was, you know, kind of like, you know, giving me some great advice along the way. So I have nothing really negative to say about Oral other than he played for the Dodgers for way too long.
That's really disappointing. I was looking forward to some
Me
negative
too.
Stuff.
I was hoping we could bash him a little.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm not the guy to do
no,
anyway,
I know,
if
I know.
Negative just stuff, but you know, I'm sure we can find something. You could probably find somebody. How about we get Matty Williams online and conference him in here?
Hey.
And then you could get some negative stuff from Oral. For sure.
In, yeah.
Speaking of which, this is kind of weird to bring up because it's a good vibe right now with the wins, two wins over the Mets and Jock doing his thing. We'll get to that in a second. But Matty did come through with the Padres, and they roughed the Giants up. And we asked Mike Kruko on Monday, I know it's about baseball and next pitch, and you got to focus every pitch, and there's no real external narratives. But that said, did the Dubon bunt that pissed off Melvin and Matt Williams play any role in the Padres coming in here and roughing up the Giants. And even Kruko said, yeah, maybe 2%.
Yeah.
What do you think, Sean?
That's a good assessment. I was going to say probably not a whole lot other than if they had the same opportunity to bury the Giants or to run the score up or to embarrass them, I don't think they'd hesitate, right? So I think Cap had already come out and said that, like, hey, we're willing to take whatever the other team gives us because that's how we're going to play. So we have to accept the other side of it. Well, you know, to me, it's not necessarily how many you win by. It's the fact that you win and they won all three. So they have the last laugh right now. Yeah, of course it plays a little bit as far as just motivation. I would say that you're already pretty motivated to go out there and win a big league baseball game or you shouldn't be in the big leagues. But if you can just get that little extra edge, you know, and that's really sometimes what it comes down to, especially when it comes down to winning close games and executing and staying focused for nine innings of baseball. If you can gain a little bit of an edge, a little bit more motivation than you may have had prior to that series or prior to that game, I definitely think it plays a factor into it. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure how much, but it definitely does. I think mentally it takes it to another net level. And I'm sure that was something that Matty Williams probably even, and maybe even Bob Melvin, you know, they probably talked to the team about that. I mean, guys don't forget stuff like that. They just don't, you know? And so, you know, I don't think they needed a speech, but you know, there's always that banter, you know, on the bus, on the plane, when it's just you and your teammates, there's going to be some comments that are going to be said, and they may be one-liners. You know, they're not going to be sit down and have a meeting about it, but they may be one-liners, and then, you know, wakes you up. It's like, all right, boys, you know, we remember what happened last time. Let's go out there and get them.
Yeah.
You know, let's show them who's boss. And they are. They're boss right now. They won. They've taken the last three.
Yeah, for sure. And so, if we, you know, it's always funny when you do a show to talk Giants, where you get them. Because if we're doing this Tuesday morning, they lost five in a row. And, you know, Luis Gonzalez had appeared in back-to-back games on the mound. And it was just bad, man. It was things weren't looking. They were starting guys named Stuart Fairchild and Kevin Padlow and Mike Papirski. And God bless these guys for chasing their big league dream. But no Giants fan had any emotional connection to any of these guys. And it was brutal. And then as you opened the conversation, Jock Peterson changed the story. Three homers. No Giant has ever done that in that park other than Pablo Sandoval in the World Series. A phenomenal individual performance, 8 RBIs, and he just kind of changes the energy. And like you said, you're starting to like him. And then here's the story, and the question, Sean, is the next day the Mets start a lefty, and Gabe Kapler starts Peterson, which is, under any other circumstance, a no-brainer. But with the Giants' insane platoon system, a little surprising. And lo and behold, he hits a home run and helps him win the game. Just wondering your thought on what Jock did Tuesday night to change the energy, and then Kapler kind of going against his grain to start him again.
Well, I always say that when you're on a losing streak, you know, how many ever games it is, as a starting pitcher, because this was my mentality, is that you want to be the guy to end it. You know, you want to be the guy to go out there and put the team on your back, you know, throw a gem. You know, just one of those things that I always feel like starting pitchers set the tone in a game. If you go out and throw a really good performance out there and help your team win a game and get back in the win column, I mean, that's kind of your job as a starting pitcher. I thought Logan Webb did that. Unfortunately, you know, the bullpen didn't hold up that game. But if they're on the flip side of that, you could have an offensive performance. You can absolutely flip the momentum in your season, and especially in the moment. And Jock Peterson did just that. I mean, can you imagine coming off a 5-game losing streak? You're up 8-2 and you lose that game. I mean, can you imagine that? Those are the hard ones. I was sitting on my couch watching the game thinking, how are they going to come back from this one, right? How are they? I was just thinking, like, what is going to be said at this point in the clubhouse? Who's going to be the leaders right now? Who are going to be the ones to like, you know, get the clubhouse thinking the right way? You know, what is going to have to be said right now? Because then they would have lost six in a row. Morale would have been down. I mean, they've been pretty resilient. We've seen them in the past. We really have. But it just, with the injuries and then losing a big game like that, when your best high leverage reliever is giving up seven, those are tough losses to overcome. But one swing of the bat changed all that. Actually, a couple swings of the bat. You know, the home run obviously was the big one to tie it up, and then the base hit on the ninth, you know, to tie it up again. that could change the season. It really can. And Jock Peterson, just I'm happy he's on the team, right? Because you know I think he's a guy that lives for the big moment. He's played in a lot of postseason games. He isn't a guy that really lets the pressure get to him. I mean, he's got a ton of power. You feel like that with one swing of the bat, every time he steps in the box, you feel like he can hit a home run. So yeah, he was a huge addition to this club in the offseason for a lot of different reasons. You know, just obviously the platoon advantage you get against righties, the power they provide, but more important, I think, than all that is just his calm under pressure. And no bigger at bat. Maybe if you look back on a season and you look at big wins, pivotal wins in a season that could turn things around, or you can always go back and, gosh, remember that game? You know, had we lost that game, could we come back from that? I mean, what would have been like? But they didn't. They won that game, and what happens? They take that momentum into yesterday's game, and they put up 9 spots early in the game, and he hits another run. So, yeah, one bat, I always say the pitchers are the ones that turned around, but Jock Peterson did it on his own.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
And you're absolutely right. I think Andy Baggerly said he has the heartbeat of a resting crocodile under pressure.
Okay.
You guys understand, like, okay, and it's exactly right, but what creates that? Is that something that you're born with? Is that something that, evolves? Some guys they're just okay under pressure. They just, for whatever reason, they don't let the moment get too big for them. I don't know if it's something that it's just the way that they're genetically. I don't buy it. I feel like it's something you have to learn. I think everybody feels the pressure, you know, in the big moment when it first comes upon them, and it's how you handle it. You know, you deal with some adversity and you figure out ways to deal with it better the next time. But you know, like I said, he's been put in that situation quite a bit, and he's thrived in those situations. And there's something to be said about guys that they shine in big moments, and he could be that guy for the Giants. Talk about postseason. I mean, he's a guy you want on that roster.
It's a great question. Are you born with that, or do you achieve it through experience, meditation?
I think it's probably different, right, Sean? I mean, some guys probably are born that way. They just have a steady hand when it's hectic all around them.
So, Sean, everything in life for us comes back to the movie The Godfather. Are you a Godfather guy, Sean? Are you?
No, I couldn't sit there and recite lines.
Darn it.
There's a scene where
Michael Corleone is defending. His father gets shot. Marlon Brando's in the hospital, and they understand that some guys are coming to kill him off, and they have to stand in front of the hospital and guard his hospital door, and a guy named Enzo the Baker shows up to help, and he gives him a gun. Long story short, the assassins pull up. Michael Corleone's hand never moves holding the gun. Enzo's hand is shaking like a leaf.
He's lightning.
And that's when Michael realizes that he's kind of born for this moment.
So there you go.
And but Enzo
was it probably can't be, which is a great story, and it's all true. Sean, but I got to imagine that those like kind of relaxation techniques or calming mechanisms can be taught, though, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can be taught.
Yeah.
With your point, though, it's – I don't want to get too deep in this matter, but like in the Godfather situation, you know, it's like, do you fear death or don't you? Right.
Well, there it is.
If the guy didn't fear death, then he's not going to worry about it.
That's
right.
It.
He's going to be calm. All he's thinking about, all he's focusing on is protecting his guy. That's it.
Yeah.
If I get killed in the process, so be it, but I'm going to do it because, you know, at least I'm going to do it with a clear mind.
Yeah.
It's baseball. It's a game, right? But it's life, too. It's how you handle yourself under pressure in life. The Giants have a guy in that clubhouse that helps with their breathing. He's the mental coach, the breathing guy. And I talked to him when we were in Milwaukee on the last road trip, because a lot of the guys, some of the pitchers, a lot of the position players, they go out and they'll just walk the outfield with this guy barefoot because he likes to get – it's called grounding. You know, you want to be barefoot in this situation, and they go through breathing techniques in through your nose, out through your nose, and it's controlled breathing. It's how to slow your heart rate down, you know, when things around you get tense. and how to stay in the moment, how to stay focused. And really, it all comes down to how you breathe. Maybe some guys just they already have that instilled in them. And some guys, they can learn it. They can learn it. They mean it's techniques. It's meditation. I mean, it's been around for years, right? And now they've brought it into the clubhouse. And a lot of guys are utilizing this guy to help them breathe. And he says, you watch Mike Yastrzemski in the box. He'll never open his mouth. He always. You know, maybe after he takes a swing, he'll show some emotion or whatever. Open. Well, when he's stepping in the box, you guys watch him tonight. He's always mouth closed, breathing through his nose, and it's this technique where you breathe through your nose a couple times, deep breaths in through your nose, and then you actually hold the breath out for as long as you can, till like you're almost gonna pass out. I mean, it's crazy. I tried it, and then. Your instinct is to take a huge deep breath in to kind of, because you don't want to pass out. But they're teaching these guys that you still stay under control. You breathe back in through your nose, and it's crazy stuff, but it's working. And I pay attention to how these guys are breathing. Logan Webb was doing it in the outfield in Milwaukee, and you know when he's on the mound, I watch it. I watch in the box now, and it really helps these guys help the game slow down around them. And it puts him in the best position to go out there and perform and produce, succeed.
That's great stuff, man. I buy it. What was the cartoon, Paulie, where the guy says, breathe, son, you forgot to breathe? Is that like Foghorn Leghorn or something like that?
I don't know. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's totally right. It's totally right. I was just doing it while you were talking to me, Sean, and I was feeling pretty relaxed, man.
Relaxed? You're good now? Yeah, yeah. If you breathe in through your nose, take a deep breath. If you breathe out, you do it like three times.
But you got to hold it, right? You got to hold it for like, I think it was in Ted Lasso, they said in for four, hold for seven, out for eight.
Boy.
How's that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, that's probably another technique as well. I think what they're trying to accomplish is, you know, you can do it as you're in the box where it doesn't take a long time. You can do it on the mound in between pitches to where you just really, and it does it. It relaxes your shoulders. You can see guys that get tense on the mound. The shoulders start to rise a little bit. Especially, you know, you can see a guy when he's overthrowing. You can just see the grip of the ball a little bit tighter, and you can see the guys that are just nice and calm. And that's why I feel like, you know, Camilo Doval didn't come up to the big leagues learning how to breathe, right? But he came up to the big leagues just with, and we talk about a slower heartbeat, where he doesn't really let a lot affect him around him. Now, does it always mean he's going to execute pitches? No. I mean, is he going to struggle? Of course he is. But he's one of those guys that just mentally has the ability to put whatever pitch he just threw behind him and not fear. Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to fear and failure, fear and the unknown, afraid to fail. And some guys, like I said, we can talk about this all day. That's a topic for another conversation. But some guys definitely handle those situations better than others.
I remember reading about Al Arbor, the coach of the New York Islanders that won four straight Stanley Cups, and they said they loved him because he used to tell what his mantra was. Do not be afraid to lose. Let it rip. They addressed it. They addressed the fear of losing and tackled it instead of having it just as this boogeyman in the closet, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, so what? Man. Let's go.
I look back on my career and think a lot of guys would say the same thing, is that could you have done more? You know, physically, probably not, because I always felt like that, you know, I worked as hard as I could, you know, physically off the field in between starts. But mentally, 100%. I mean, that's probably I probably would have thrived with the resources that the guys have now. Cause I mean, when we played, you know, I always say when we played, you know, it wasn't that long ago, but there wasn't we didn't have those resources in the clubhouse. And actually it was that got looked down upon. It was a sign of weakness. And I think that's kind of the old school mentality of baseball that, you know, you play hurt, right? Don't want to see you in the training room, and God forbid you go and get somebody to analyze your brain, right? I mean, that's the ultimate sign of weakness. So, I think remember John Smoltz talking. He was like one of the first guys that I remember, you know, utilizing a mental coach. And remember, he would be the guy that would sit behind home plate. There was a lot of talk about it. He was wearing a certain color hat, I believe, and it was like Smoltz's guy. And you know, when things started heating up around them, this is like back in the early 90s when they were starting to play, you know, play good baseball in Atlanta, and they were getting to the playoffs. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember that, but he was one of the first guys that actually came out and said, yeah, I'm using a mental guy. Of course I am. I mean, it's gonna help me in the long run. And, heck, he's a Hall of Famer, so there you have it. But, yeah, now I feel like a lot of guys, you know, if I would have definitely utilized it, because I knew that that was the biggest weakness for me, is just how I handle myself, you know, under pressure, or, you know, the fear of failure and things like that. But, you know, if you can think the right way and you can hand yourself under pressure, gosh, it can lengthen careers, and it can help your team win ball games ultimately.
Man, good saw that with Jock. And it all came from Jock Peterson, his hitting bombs. Yeah. Right? He handles the moment. Good stuff. Totally going from this really cool, intense mental talk to just starting Jock against a lefty. You know, I thought it was, I know, right?
Hey, I'm sure Cap didn't have to meditate over that one.
He said, but he was talking, he gave a very Kapler answer to us. He said, he has that deep voice. We discussed the expectation, both internally and externally, after a night like
externally,
Tuesday.
Externally, yeah.
That people would want to see Jock perform today. Well, that was his explanation. Because you could tell it kind of chafed him to start him against a lefty, you know?
Yeah, well, the question should have been, you know, and I know it's hypothetical, but had Austin Slater been healthy, you know, is Jock still playing yesterday, right?
So that's a good call. Yeah,
I feel like that, you know, the options were, you know, you play Jock or you know, do you go to a young kid on the bench? I mean, I haven't gone through all those, but you know, we talk kind of joking around about Bochy's theory, if I hit a home run, get in the lineup. Well, Cap was like, well, you hit three, you're absolutely in the lineup the next day.
That's the rule, right? Three.
I don't care who's pitching. And it made him look good, too, because he hits a homer off the lefty in his first at-bat and first time he started against the lefty all year. I think he only has 10 career home runs against left-handed pitching. And, it's, you know, and that's definitely why he wasn't brought over, you know, to the Giants. He was going to face righties, which, you know, that's who you face the majority of. So he's going to get a lot of at-bats. But and now what do you do, right? Now after he has a good game against the lefty, is he stay in the lineup against lefties from here on out? That's another question.
That is a good question. I think the Reds are playing. I think he told us the Reds are pitching all righties this weekend. I probably should have checked that before I said it. So it might solve that problem right away. But
that might be something I need to look into, considering I'm hopping on a plane to Cincy in about 5 hours.
Oh, good. We get you in Cincinnati.
Can you give me a scouting report on the Reds?
I got you for you right now. Here you go. They're 13-30.
Okay.
14.5 out. But they're actually 4-6 in their last 10. So, you know. Not the worst thing in the history of the world. And we talked about it with the beat writers that Cincinnati is a bottom two road city in the National League. Most others agreed that it was. Sean, could you guess if the writers had to say which were the bottom two National League road cities?
Well, okay. Well, Cincinnati you already named, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Cincinnati and it's a tough call. I'd have to think about the whole league. I mean, I don't think Pittsburgh would be in there because I actually think Pittsburgh's.
You are correct. Pittsburgh is not on the list.
It's taken up a notch.
I'm going to anger a friend of mine who listens because he's from this city, and he's a big listener. But it's not me. I'm just telling him what the people are saying. That's all I'm saying.
Give me the division because I'm drawing
Central.
A blank. Even in the
Central.
National League.
Central.
It's not Milwaukee. It's
no.
Not Pittsburgh. Cincinnati already named. Chicago, absolutely not. St. Louis.
Yep. Would you agree?
I mean, outside of just going to the ballpark, yes.
Thanks. There you go. You said it perfectly. By the way, what was interesting was that you quickly said it's not Milwaukee because you had a little love for Milwaukee.
Yeah, Milwaukee's a great town. It really is. That to me is the most improved city since I first started playing. Obviously, you know, not playing at County Stadium has a lot to do with it. You know, be it with the new ballpark, that helps. But just the town in itself, it's a sleepy town. It's a sleeper town. I mean, there's a lot going on there. It's really fun there. There's a lot of places to go, and I mean, it's right on the water there.
Yeah, I call it a baby Chicago. It's like a little. It's got kind of exactly the same vibe as Chicago, but really shrunken down.
Totally. That's a good call. Chicago feels like a big city. Milwaukee doesn't feel like a big city, but it does. It's still a city. It still has, you know, it still has all the major sports. I mean, you can consider Green Bay part of that. I mean, all of the north, but. You know, it's they're very passionate about the sports. I don't know, it's just the people are great. You know, the people are super friendly.
They are. They're tremendous.
It's a great walking city.
a lot of good restaurants. You know, it's pretty. It's just a cool little town. Got a great vibe there.
I agree. Right. Plus Fonzie and Laverne and Shirley. Yeah. So anyway,
yes,
hey, man.
That's right. The Fonz. I got a picture with the Fonz.
Shout out to the Fonz.
There's a statue, Polly, of the Fonz.
Is it really? Where is it in
on
town?
On the Milwaukee, on the Chicago River.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah.
My wife and kids and father-in-law, we all went out there in 2019 because he lives in Michigan. So I was doing the series there and we all went out there and took a picture next to the Fonz.
Yeah. Nice.
Got
Happy
to.
Days, man.
Yeah.
Happy days are here again. All right. Off you go, Sean. Can't wait for your broadcast. That'll be awesome. So I look forward to that. And are you going to Philly also?
I'm going to Philly and Miami. Yeah, okay. You get me for 10. Sorry about that. But
no,
yeah,
are you kidding me? We're looking forward to it, man. Can't wait. All right. Hop on that bird. Great conversation. Go say hi to Jock. Ask him why his heart beats so slow. And do that breathing on the plane when you. When some guy's squeezing next to you on the plane, just start doing your breathing.
Or when
all
the
right?
seat in front of you gets reclined. Yeah.
When it gets turbulent, yeah, I'll use the breathing.
No, Paulie said even better. When the guy in front of you puts his seat back.
Because that's when my heart rate goes up. It's like, bro, come on, man.
Seat back goes back. Yeah.
All right, be good, Sean. Take care, man.
All right, guys. You too.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.